Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, in case you forgot, the legendary Randy Erickson. And we're back. So, I know it sounds stupid to say I haven't had time to spend a couple hours to get a podcast out, but that's life. So, this episode with Jennifer, we've been sitting here for a while, but I think, ta-da, we're finally got it out. So there, that's where we're at. Got a couple of more in the can, so to speak. So we'll have a few episodes. And actually had a few people say, hey, yeah, I'll talk. So we'll keep this going for a little while again until I get busy. I think I got 3 races next month and 3 in July and 3 in August and Iceland and blah, blah. So that's where we're at. So remember, slow is fast. Fast is good. Hit your marks and enjoy my chat with Jennifer. So thanks for listening. Bye.
Hello? Jennifer, are you there?
I'm here. Gosh, hi. Sorry.
Go on, you're on Mexico time. It can be any time, right?
Oh my gosh. I'm just trying to get the hang of Zoom. We're not using it on my phone. I don't know what happened. Yeah, hopefully there's a lot of barking dogs outside, so I was trying to find a quiet spot.
it is quiet. I don't hear any barking dogs.
Good, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah, that's a Mexico, South America, Central America thing. All the dogs, right?
Totally.
Yeah, but I can't say that too loud. Chili's in the other room. She'd be upset if she knew I was talking about her.
How have you been?
Good, busy, but that's fine. It's gonna get busier, I guess. I start traveling to shoot in a couple of weeks, and then it gets real nutsy. I'm gone about every 2 weeks for the rest of the year.
Oh, wow.
But that'll be fun. So. Okay, where should we start?
Wherever you want. What is this podcast exactly about?
Oh, paddling, what you're doing, what you've been doing.
There you go.
It's kind of, so I think you know how much I like water, which is not, but I've got about, I'm doing a whole series on, well, you know, the race to Alaska, right?
I do. I was going to try to do that one, but it didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, that's a big commitment. Anyway, I just did an episode with the race director, and I actually got 3 or 4 teams lined up I'm going to talk to. So awesome. We're in a very heavy water sport spring podcast season. How's that sound?
Yeah, totally. Got lots of races coming up this year. I think the Yukon 1000 is happening finally this year as well.
Yeah. So, all right. So what have you been doing since last time we talked? When did we talk? Alabama 650?
Yeah. Did we talk Alabama 650 2020?
No. I don't remember when we talked. So let's forget about that. What have you been doing?
Well,
okay. No, you did the 340.
I did the 340. Yes. Last year.
21.
Yeah. So I did the 340 and right. That was, that went really well. It was actually really funny. I don't know if we talked about my results, but I got the same exact time in the same exact place. So it was very strange.
So we didn't talk about the 21. Let's start there. So 2021 Missouri MR 340. tell people what that is.
Well, the MR 340 is an annual race that goes 340 miles across the state of Missouri, on the Missouri River, of course. You have, I believe, 88 hours to complete it, and there's plenty of checkpoints and stops and help along the way. So it's just one of those really great races if people are looking to get into the ultra endurance racing side of things. It's one of those races that's, it's really fun, but it's also quite safe and gives people a chance to kind of get their bearings before entering something like, you know, let's say the Yukon, where you don't, you know, you don't see people so often. So that race for me was interesting because I didn't have a support crew set up. So my mom actually volunteered to drive with me from Oregon to Missouri to be my solo support crew. And it did not go so well. Bless her heart.
But she probably had no idea that she would be working harder than you, did she?
She did not. And, you know, to her, you know, in her defense, I did not set her up for complete success. And that was because there was a lot of things about that race being a support crew that I did not think about, navigation being one of them, which was the most important since my mom is not a millennial. You know, she doesn't rely on GPS, doesn't know how to use GPS. So yeah, that's where we went wrong.
Well,
it ended up working out.
I mean, obviously I'm talking to you. Are you still talking to your mother?
My mom is, you know, she's my biggest support. And, you know, if it weren't for her, I wouldn't have even made it out there. I mean, like I said, she drove with me and she supported me through the whole entire thing. And, you know, even though she missed several checkpoints and did not make it to the finish until about 2 hours after I ended, it really was an experience in itself. And I'm so happy that she was there to finally see what, you know, endurance racing is all about, because she's heard about it and she's seen it on Instagram, but she got to experience it firsthand. So I'm very thankful for that.
So did she, so she got to experience it, but does she really understand it now, or just does she understand why you do it?
I don't think it gave her an idea of why I do it, but I think it gave her an idea of the amount of effort that's put into preparing for a race and executing the race and finishing the race. And it also gave both of us a better understanding of how important a support crew is. So yeah, I think yes and no.
As long as it was a positive experience, that's all that really matters, right?
Yeah.
So how long did the race take you? Oops. We lost Jennifer.
Oh my gosh, what happened?
Well, I can tell you exactly what happened. You're in Mexico.
It says I have full Wi-Fi. That's strange. Yeah. Well, welcome to Mexico.
So I've had the pleasant experience of trying to, you know, do videos and upload photos and stuff like that all up and down the Baja coast. So, you know what? It might happen again and we'll just get going again.
All right. Where did we leave off?
My last question was how long did the MR 340, 360 take you?
I think it ended up being 53, somewhere between 53 and 56 hours. I apologize. I can't think off the top of my head, but like I said, it was the exact same time that I got in the 2018 MR 340. So it was interesting. Yeah.
Did you have to paddle faster? Because I'm guessing your supplies and rendezvous and stuff took a little longer. So do you think you actually had a faster paddling time?
No. No, definitely not. I think that I can say that if we wouldn't have had these hangups, because I didn't wait around for my mom for the most part. I just kind of kept pushing through. So it was definitely a test on my mental and physical strength more than I thought it would be. But there were two stops and I ended up waiting around 2 hours at one and I think 2 or 3 hours at another, because I was getting signs of hypothermia because I didn't have my change of clothes I was expecting. And then of course I didn't have food and, you know, something to drink. And like I said earlier, the great thing about this race is that there are people around depending on where you stop and what time of day it is. But for the most part, you can get food and, you know, water if you need it, which is great. But it did put a big kind of stop to different sections of my race, which, you know, it bums me out because I definitely know I would have gotten a better time and place if I had a support crew for more than half the race, but it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
I finished. I almost quit. I really did. I had to talk myself out of it. I was, in the middle of hallucinating and I had to convince myself that I had to keep going.
What do you tell yourself? How do you do that? Cause I'm sure it would have been very easy to pull over and like, that I'm done.
Yeah. You know, I did pull over and kind of did some back and forth self-talk saying, okay, I'm done. There's no way. You know, it's actually too dangerous for me to get back in the boat because I'm feeling a bit hypothermic. And if I do get back in the boat, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to have a problem. Didn't have my phone. My phone was dead because I didn't have my charger. I mean, it was just a complete disaster. But the funny thing was what finally got me back in the boat was there was these two gentlemen that stopped. They were in a tandem boat. And I basically looked at him and said, give me your sweatshirt. he had a sweatshirt on that he was going to take off and throw in his car or in his support crew's car. I said, I need that. And he goes, okay. And he thought that I was just going to wear it for a second. And I said, oh no, I'm taking this with me. And he said, well, I think it must've been his favorite sweatshirt or something, but anyway, I ended up giving it back to him at the end of the race, but that's what got me back in the boat was that dude's sweatshirt.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say sometimes it's little things, but that was probably not a little thing. It probably warmed you up.
Oh yeah. It got me through the night. Let's put it that way.
All right. So we got that done. What else have you done this year? I saw you did something on the Willamette River, but I don't know what you did.
Yeah. So between that and the MR340, between the MR340 and the Willamette River, I did the Yukon, the Alabama 650 again. Mm-hmm. And that was just, that was great. I'm really glad I did that again. I was able to find a support crew, husband and wife, Al and Debbie from Texas. They volunteered to be my support crew. I had never met them before. And let me tell you, we're going to be friends for lifetime because they were just so cool. By the end of the race, I ended up calling them Mom too and Dad too, because they were just, oh my gosh, they were amazing. And I ended up beating my time from the previous year by almost 24 hours and got second place female solo, and just really was impressed with myself and how I got through that race way better than I did the previous year.
Why do you think you did so much better? Oops, hang on. Some idiot turned their other computer screen on.
No worries. I think I did better probably partly because I knew what to expect more or less. And also because I just had, that whole extra year from the last time I did it to kind of prepare and go over what went wrong in 2020. And I think it helped that I had to, even though April Zilg, who was my solo support crew for 2020, did an absolutely amazing job. I don't think anyone could top that. My support crew was a team of two. So I think that really helped because, one of them could sleep while the other one helped. And even though I'm not even sure neither of them got any sleep, but, it was knowledge and preparing and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, that's an interesting race because the portages don't count. Like the clock's not running. Is that the best way to put it?
It is, but it's kind of tricky because, unless you're Sally O'Donnell, who I know for a fact, she's got her support crew letting her know exactly how much time she has to do everything. And, she's in and out of there in the 45 minute allotted time that doesn't count. It's tricky because most people are like, okay, well, this is a 45 minute layover. So, I'm going to take an hour. So there's 15 minutes. And then at the next 30 minute one, you're like, okay, this is a 30. So I'm going to take an hour. And that's an extra 30 minutes. So you kind of have to be strategic about it and think, okay, is this where I'm going to stop? And if so, how long am I going to stop? 30 to 45 minutes is nothing. That's enough time to get out of your boat and stretch and complain a little bit and eat something and, drive to the other side of the dam. So,
yeah, but yeah. And I suppose you add up enough of those, it gets to be a major chunk of time, transition time. You gotta just keep moving.
It does. And they don't count, at the end of the race that, those nine layovers, they all that time gets taken off your actual time. So you just gotta be smart about it.
Yeah. But if you get a half hour for transition and you take an hour, you've just lost 30 minutes. That's exactly.
But it also can be an advantage because, it's like, think about it. If you're already stopped and you've already gotten out of the boat, why wouldn't you just stay there instead of saying, okay, I'm going to only take this free 45 minutes. And then 2 hours later, I'm going to spend all the time meeting you somewhere else and getting out of the boat. And you kind of got to figure out what makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
So
you have an experienced crew. Are they able to figure that out for you? Or is that something, while you're paddling for 4 hours with nothing else to do, are you trying to figure that out on your head? So who makes those decisions?
Ultimately, the racer is going to make the decision because most of us who are ultra endurance racers are very stubborn. But your crew is there to kind of reason with you. And you are thinking about it as you're approaching the stop, because you're going to think, you know, what time of day is it? Am I tired? How long has it been since I slept? Do I need to eat something? You know, all that good stuff. So it's ultimately, it's up to the racer, but it is the job of the support crew to, you know, as the race goes on and the more delusional and tired you get, they need to kind of make a decision and help you figure it out.
Yeah. So here's a little more general question. Sort of, well, I got prefaces, but so how long have you been endurance paddling?
Oh, I would say truly endurance paddling since 2018 for that first MR340 race. That's my my first real true endurance race.
So you may be able to answer this, and maybe it hasn't, but have endurance paddling events gotten more competitive in the last, well, almost 4 years now?
Yeah, I mean, yes, they have. I think they've definitely gotten more popular, especially with, you know, thanks to social media, they've gotten more popular. And there's actually a lot of races out there that I didn't know about that I'm kind of hearing about. So I'd say, yes, I think that people are starting to seek more and more stretches of water where endurance racing is possible. And, you know, I do definitely see usually the same faces in all these different endurance races, especially the Yukon, the Alabama, the California. Well, I wouldn't say the California 100, some people, but most of these longer races, yes, same faces.
Yeah.
I think that the California 100 and the races that are more doable in a day, kind of attract different people every year.
Yeah.
But the longer ones, same people, but you know, it's everyone stepping up their game every year. I mean, we're all getting better and learning more things, and it's pretty cool. And then, you know, going back to the Willamette River Trail thing that I did, you know, even just looking in my own backyard, I never would have thought, you know, a race of that magnitude would be possible. But, you know, I paddled a portion of the Willamette River and realized like, oh, maybe I could even start an ultra endurance race in my hometown.
Well, of course you did. So what was that paddle?
So that paddle for me was a mix of things. So first and foremost, I was just dying to do something because, you know, I decided to move to Baja and I didn't know what kind of paddling I could get into down here. So I really wanted to get on the river. So I started researching, and I'd always heard about the Willamette River Trail, but I never did it, probably because I just haven't lived in Oregon for years. And I started researching and I saw that there was an organization called Willamette River Keeper that is a nonprofit that supports the, you know, keeping the Willamette River trail clean and, you know, signage and kind of just promoting it and getting more people out there on the water. And so I started a GoFundMe for my 36th birthday. And I said, okay, I'm going to paddle 176 miles or so of this river. And I just kind of started my first GoFundMe and raised $600, which was awesome. And unfortunately, I didn't get to finish the whole thing that like I wanted to, due to the fact that I had a strict schedule to cross the border and the river just wasn't moving so fast. But it was absolutely wonderful. And I went from Eugene, Oregon to Albany, which is, I want to say, about 50 or so miles. It took me 3 days. I camped for 2 nights. It was freezing cold and I had a lot of fun.
So what is the river trail? Is it, you know, describe it to me. Is it, you know, their campsites? Is it marked? What do they do?
Yeah, so the Willamette River Trail basically stretches 187 miles. It's full of, you know, parks and forests, and it's overseen by the Willamette River Keeper. And there's actually digital maps that you can download of the upper, and upper being Eugene to Albany, which I did, and then the lower water trail, which goes into the Columbia River. And it's marked so that the river keeper puts up signs that says, you know, you're at mile, you know, 100, or you're at mile 120. And there's a lot of really, really cool kind of almost like off the grid feeling little camp spots that are either on islands, little tiny islands, you know, that you could walk from one end to another, or, you know, sides of the river that are not easily accessible. It'll tell you whether these camping areas are easily accessible by car, just to kind of, you know, for people like me or women like me or men who are, you know, are a little bit nervous to be camping by themselves. It'll let you know how remote it is. So for me, you know, I know my parents were terrified, like, oh my gosh, you're going, you know, because there's a big homeless problem around Albany and Eugene and Salem. And but everywhere I camped, I camped on an island. So it was, you could only access it by boat. I never saw another person while I was camping. And it's great. Willamette River Keeper really keeps up a good portion of that river. So it was awesome.
Yeah, very cool. I have alternative reasoning for asking, because Paulette is actually doing some work she works at the Cow Creek Reservation in a clinic near Eugene. It's like, well, you know what, you could work a little paddling trip in there while you're, because it's one of the place will take her anytime she wants to go. So he could like, oh, say, gosh, yeah, come out for a week.
Do it. Please do it. It is just, I mean, you can, I've never seen so many bald eagles in my life. I mean, I got to see bald eagles, you know, carrying fish and ducks and, you know, little river otters. And it was just lots and lots of birds, osprey. It was rad.
Yeah. Well, now I can give her something else to think about doing. So, although I'm not sure when I've talked about this a little bit. We have a year at a glance calendar on the kitchen table that's been there for 2 months, because we had to figure out our whole schedule for the rest of the year.
Oh my goodness. I wish I could do that. I'm all over the place, man.
Yeah. You know, I have certain dates of races that I have to go to, and she has things she wants to do. So far we've managed to work it all out, but maybe we
good
can
for you guys. That's important.
Yeah, maybe get her, find her a week where she could do a river trip.
Well, I don't know if you guys drink wine, but I heard rumors that there are little riverside wine. I don't know what you call them, a winery. That you can basically
vineyard, winery, yeah.
Yeah, that you could like pull over in your kayak, and they're specifically there for people traveling by boat. I never saw one, but. I'm all about that. You know, if you're just doing it for fun and you're not racing, might as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a bonus for her. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, you know, don't paddle and drink, but you know, when you're pulled over for the night, having a couple glasses of wine under the stars, you just can't beat it in Oregon. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And I think, I'll have to inform her of that. Like, here's how it goes in our house. Hey, I found this week-long river trip that you should go do.
Awesome.
Yeah. So what are you doing in Baja?
Funny question. I don't know. No. You know, I moved here because my home for the last 16 years was Oahu, Hawaii, and it was just, it just got so expensive that it was just so stressful. And it was really hard for me to save money and just do the things that I loved. It was getting just more difficult. So going through all the different options I had, either moving back to Oregon, which was going to be a no-go for my 13-year-old son who loves to surf.
Yeah.
I started looking at California and just started going more south and more south and more south. And I just ended up looking at Baja and saw so much potential down here for all the things that we do, you know, water sports, to include surfing, paddling, fishing, all the things that we love. And it's more affordable for us. Yeah. And we're here and we're just exploring. And we love it so far. We've been here, gosh, it's been almost 3 weeks we've been here. We crossed the border on February 26th. So far so good. And I actually didn't realize how hard it was to just go find a job. You have to go through a whole work permit thing, and you can't submit it yourself. Your employer has to do it. So thus I started to think maybe I should start my own business, and that's just what I did. So
honestly, that's one of the reasons why you're here. 'Cause I want to know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah. I people have been bothering me. Some of my real close friends who are just amazing entrepreneurs. One of my friends, Maribel, who actually coincidentally is Mexican, and my other good girlfriend, April Zilg, who's just been such an influence to me as far as, you know, being a female entrepreneur in the sports field. They're like, man, you know so much about gear and getting ready for these ultras and, you know, the mental toughness aspect of it. Why don't you turn that into some income? And I've always been a bit shy. You know, I love sharing with people the knowledge that I've acquired through all these races I've done, but, you know, why not make it a job if I love it so much? So
yeah.
I created a few coaching packages on a platform called Delenta, which I knew nothing about. I'm not really that computer savvy when it comes to all that kind of stuff. So I've been getting some guidance from my friends, and I've got some coaching packages set up, and it's basically just guiding people, if whether it's their first ultra endurance race, or they're just thinking about doing one, or they've done one and they had to pull out because of this, that, and the other thing. And yeah, I consider myself an ultra endurance paddling coach.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
it's kind of niche, but it sounds, I mean, to me, as I wouldn't say an outsider, but as an outsider, it seems like it is a real growth sport, as much as it can be. I mean, there seems to be, like you said before, a lot of races and a lot of people going to it looking for that different challenge.
Yeah. I think that's what's kept me away from a lot of, you know, starting a lot of businesses, is I get very self-conscious about things because I'm thinking in my head, you know, who wants to listen to me? Who wants to do this when they can just do it themselves? But you know, the truth of it is I have so many people emailing me and messaging me and asking me all these questions about gear and, you know, training and sleeping and all this stuff. And I mean, people definitely want the information, and yeah, I have so much information to share, and I think it's going to be a really exciting journey. I do have one of my first clients that signed up for a consultation, because I do offer a package called Testing the Waters to kind of just discuss with people, you know, if they're wondering, like, ultra endurance paddling coaching, what is this all about? You know, I want people to feel comfortable and for us to figure out what it is that I can offer people.
Yeah, well, it seems like a good way to do it. All right. I don't want you to give away any lessons, but if somebody comes to you that's an athlete, you know, an endurance athlete, let's say somebody that's run 100 miles trail race.
Okay.
You know, they've got some fitness. They got, you know, they don't know nothing, but they don't know anything. How do you how do you know if they can do it? Can you talk to somebody and kind of pick their brain and say, yeah, you could be a good paddler, or no, you probably should find something else?
Well, first and foremost, I would never tell someone that right off the bat, because I think,
yeah,
I think that's such a self, you know, limiting mindset to have. But it's kind of interesting you ask that, because it's like surfing. So I was a surf instructor for, gosh, 10 plus years on Oahu, and I have had clients from every walk of life, and I could immediately tell when someone wasn't going to, it wasn't necessarily that they weren't going to be good at it. It was whether or not they were going to give themselves enough credit to be able to do it or not. And surfing's an intense sport. It's very intense. And if you don't have that mental toughness, or, you know, you don't have the guts to do it and try it, and you're too afraid. I mean, a healthy amount of fear is fine, but if you're going to limit yourself, then, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, this probably after this is not going to be good for you, because it becomes dangerous. You know, if you doubt yourself in the ocean can feel that, the water can feel that, the river can feel that. So, that's kind of why, you know, it's like, I'll talk to people and I'll ask them, you know, what are your goals? Are you just doing this because you want to finish it? Are you trying to prove it to someone? Are you trying to prove it to yourself? I mean, there's a lot of questions that I would ask someone before figuring out, for the most part, what really they want to get into. What is their goal in entering the MR340 or the Yukon 1000 or whatever race they're thinking about.
Yeah, I get that. It seems to me like you need to want to do it yourself, for yourself. I don't think external forces are the best motivator for ultra endurance.
Yeah. And I think most people do, you know, they do want to do it for themselves, but I think that a lot of people, when you're talking to them, they almost don't even believe themselves that they can accomplish their goals. So, you know, it's my job as a coach, as any coach in any sport, you know, to push people and let them know that there are areas they can work on and things in their regular everyday life that they can tap into to help them kind of be more confident. And, you know, I don't think we're necessarily, although people can argue with this, and even sometimes I contradict myself, but I think that a lot of people are not born to be endurance athletes per se, maybe in a physical capacity, but mentally, I think that, and that's something that I really focus on, like I've said 1,000 times, is mental toughness. Yeah. I think that there are things that we can do as human beings to tap into that
mental
state of mind that we might not think we have, but we do.
Yeah. 50% of ultra endurance is 90% mental.
Absolutely. Maybe more.
Yeah, I get that. But I mean, you have a background in coaching, so this isn't really that big of a leap for you, though.
It isn't, but I do think, like I said, you know, I'm sure some people are raising eyebrows, like what exactly is an ultra endurance paddling coach? So, you know, I'm confident about it, and, you know, it is my passion. And like I said, I want to share it with people, and, you know, I don't have the time or the funds to be doing much for free. So I want to make a living off of it. And I want to honestly help people and guide people, because I want to see people succeed. I mean, I want there to be more competition out there, because even though there are a lot of ultra endurance paddlers out there, like I said, I do often see the same faces, and it would be nice to get more competition out there. And if I'm the one who's going to rally everyone, I'm stoked.
But I do believe there is something, this kind of something I've come to in the last year or two. If you're good at what you're doing, you should be getting paid for it.
Totally.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
But so Well, my pitch to you, but just remember this. I've never done an adventure race ever, and I'm like the go-to person, one of the go-to people in adventure racing. So you just fake it till you make it.
Yep, fake it till you make it.
Yeah. So I don't think
I'm faking it. I'm definitely
not. No, you're not. But you can fake the confidence that you are. Well, it's not faking it, but you got to show the confidence that you are a good coach and you are worth what you're worth. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So you're gonna send me the link so we can put it in the show notes for everybody, because paddling and pack rafting and ultra, everything, that's all growing. So we need to make sure people know how to get a hold of you.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm working on that. I know that's something that April's helping me with, is extending my avenues of advertisement, because of that I'm not good at right now. Just for people that are listening, if you know, just a quick link is going to be on my Instagram, Paddlefish Surf. I have a link on my bio there. I use the coaching platform Delenta. But I'll give you the info, and
anyone we'll get who's it out interested? There, we'll try to get the word out there. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah. So, but then there's one other thing you got to do, maybe.
Okay.
So I may be there. I may be in Baja in November with one of the race teams for the 1000. You need to come be a part of our support crew for a few days and hang out with the race trucks.
Absolutely. Count me in.
You'd have a good time. They're good people. Okay, one more question. So everybody I know that goes down there, all these, the race teams and stuff, just, they love Baja. They call it a magical place. Are you seeing that yet? Or are you still a little too new there to really start feeling that Baja vibe, whatever it is?
I am 100% feeling that. It is, I have met just the coolest people. And, you know, I do really everywhere I go, but I think that it's very similar to Hawaii in a sense where the people that you're meeting are very like-minded people. We're all adventurers and we're all looking for something amazing out of life. And I think that places like Hawaii and Baja, you know, we're all the same and we were looking for the same thing. And so therefore we're drawn to each other. And I've met nothing but amazing people, both locals and expats, and just beautiful water. I mean, Baja, you've got the east side, which is the Sea of Cortez, and then you've got the west side, which is obviously the Pacific. And they're only, gosh, an hour or so apart from each other. So yeah. Absolutely magical.
Yeah, very cool. Are you gonna get to race, or is the coaching business gonna get you too busy this year?
You know, this year, even before I started this business, I really deemed it the year of transition and transformation for myself. Since that episode that happened with my mother, I decided that it's only fair for me to become a support crew. So I picked the hardest race to be a support crew for, which is, I, in my mind, is the Alabama 650. So my friend Mirko from Germany, who competed in the Alabama 650 last year, him and I are going to be escorting Francis, who escorted Mirko last year. So I'm going to get firsthand experience on what it's like to be a support person. And I think it's smart. It'll help me as an athlete in the long run. So no races for me this year so far, but that could change. Yes, support crew, 100%. I'm going to be there.
Yeah. So you want to hear something a little weird right now?
I do.
So I've been chatting with Francis. I have another friend that's looking for a floor to crash on for the Boston Marathon. So I think I've hooked Francis up with my friend Olga. So today, actually, literally while we were talking, a message came through from her.
That's so weird.
It is. So
I told you, man, the ultra endurance world and paddling is so small.
It is. It is. So, all right. Is the sun setting there yet?
It is. Yes, it is just about done setting. It's a beautiful, cool night in Baja. The nights get real cold.
I have a picture from me from like the first year I went down here, and I've got like my down jacket, my down vest, my raincoat over, you know, and it's like 11 o'clock in the morning and it's 90 degrees, but I haven't warmed up from the night before. So.
Totally. No, we've been, my son and I have been going on camping trips every week for about 3 or 4 days, surf, you know, exploring the surf, and gosh, at nighttime, it gets cold.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go enjoy the last little bit of sunset. And I think I got a dog that wants to go out. So that's always, that's always how I know it's time to end the podcast. Chili wants to go outside.
Well, thanks for having me again, and please keep in touch and let me know anything else you need from me, and hopefully I'll see you down here.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Adios.